This is Boomer in the Morning with Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Wednesday morning, hour two. Welcome back to the show, Boomer in the Morning, along with Ryan Pinder here on a pretty good-looking day. Good start to it. Game four of the Cup Final going tonight, Avalanche at Lightning. We've got it at 6. And pleased to be joined by our next guest. I was concerned. I was got some intel that maybe our next guest may not be able to get on the radio today, but I believe we have Dave Dickinson. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, the voice is struggling still, but you know, priorities. I gotta make sure I show up for you guys. You know.
Well, that sounds pretty good out of the gate. I gotta be honest. I was expecting
better,
much worse.
Better than yesterday for sure.
It's like they say: are you injured or are you hurt? So I guess you're just injured.
You can play. Neither. Just soft. Just soft. That's all.
I don't know if that's it. Is it too easy to make the connection to losing your voice at halftime after being down 24-3? Is that too easy?
Well, I think I was doing a little yelling. I had to apologize to the referee crew after the game. So it was certainly a stressful game. I mean, it was weird. Like you said, it was kind of at a loss for words at halftime, to be honest. Just kind of, I guess, said it as I felt. And the guys kept playing, though. Guys kept playing, which was excellent. And it was just when we won, I have to admit, I was a bit in shock. Like, really, did we just pull that off? And we did. So it was great.
Yes. I've talked to a few people about it. You were there, obviously. You hear a lot about the wind. You heard about it at Ivor Wynn, and then they built the new stadium, and they kind of changed the positioning of it, but now the winds are swirling as opposed to going one way or the other. How big of a part was that in your I guess, the inability to kind of get much done offensively in the first half and then exploding in the second half?
Well, they were on fire first off. I mean, they were running fast football with the wind, and they were getting a lot of plays, and our guys were tired. And, you know, if you actually, when you throw deep with the wind, it's not easy. But if you're throwing just like in windows and you're, it does help with your velocity, and the ball gets on the receiver quicker, and it kills the kicking game. But offensively, it really wasn't the wind. I mean, we had a nice play down the middle of the field. We're offsides. We missed a throw into the wind to Malik that probably Bo makes if it's not windy. But then we drop another one, and we were just on our heels, and they were taking it to us, no doubt about it. So the wind was a factor, no doubt, on special teams. Like our first punt, I think we netted like 8 or 9 yards, and it forces you into some different decisions. But overall, is it equal for both teams? I was happy and kind of surprised to get the wind in the fourth quarter because, you know, I deferred planning on hopefully that if I needed it or if I was close, I would just take the wind in the fourth quarter, maybe even give the ball up in both halves, which as an offensive guy I hate to do. But I thought about it. But then when we were down by 21, I said, we got to take the ball. And so basically, Hamilton decided to give us the ball basically into the wind, and I think they thought, well, don't give them any life. Don't let them get anything started. And we were able to hang in there 24-10 after that quarter, and then it turned around. All of a sudden, no, we have the wind. I thought that was big.
Yeah. So beyond that second week in a row where you go into the locker room at the half down, and then you come back and your defense steps up. You gave up against Montreal, what, 3 points in the second half? In this game, just 6. What are these adjustments? Is it fine tuning, or is it just kind of been the way the last two games have played out?
Well, I don't know. I know exactly you know what the correct answer is, but I know our coaches are doing a good job, both sides the football, trying to come up with some things that put our guys in better positions to win. So, you know, it'd be nice to maybe have that plan going early. It's much easier to play with the lead. It's much easier to as a team to keep your confidence with a lead, but it is showing us a lot from our team that we just keep grinding and fighting. And, you know, it's one of these weird things because, you know, in theory you could be 0-2, but you're 2-0, you feel pretty good about yourself, but you still got a lot of things you got to clean up and you got a lot of areas that you got to get better at.
Said it to you last week, a year ago, you're 0-2 with much the same, like you say, there's some hiccups and some warts on your game, but you didn't find a way. This year you're 2-0, you live much easier to live with this situation and scenario than a year ago.
Yeah, and you're playing a team that's 0-2, and, you know, we remember how desperate we were. And when you're 0-2, you know we were going to show up and basically put it all on the line. So our team has to make sure we do the same. And, you know, we're in a little bit of an injury bug right now, to be straight up. I mean, this game against Hamilton, I mean, to finish that game with Charlie Power for basically two quarters as our tailback. And Charlie hadn't played a game in 3 years, basically, because of his Achilles and COVID. So he was just supposed to get kind of eased into this game, kind of just come back and get yourself acclimated. All of a sudden, he's our starting tailback, which he's never done. And I do feel like our back end is beat up. And you could tell in the 425 yards given up on the passing game is not going to get it done on most nights. But they're battling, and but we got to kind of get this group together, and we got to find a way to get another win, get to our bye week, and hopefully get healthier.
Yeah, I'll get to, obviously, the health situation, but just going back to this game, they knew, as much as you knew, they knew where you were at with your top two running backs, top three, whatever you want to call it, out for the fourth quarter. It's a different story to come back in the fashion that you did on the road when the other team knows you're throwing the ball. And it wasn't so much just the deficit in terms of number of points, but because they knew you were going to be throwing the ball. Bo ran for 0 yards, and Power ran for three, and it was everything else was through the air. Impressive to be able to do that when the other team basically knows what's coming.
Yeah, and I think the most impressive part of that is the offensive line, because, you know, if you can keep the D-line off balance, you know, with runs and play actions and that sort of stuff, you kind of get a chance to keep your quarterback upright. But we tried a little bit of that. They weren't buying it at all. They didn't take the cheese at all. And, you know, so we kind of, you're right. We just had to throw the ball. And like you say, Bo and the receivers really stepped up too. I mean, we made a lot of 50-50 ball catches, as there were basically you're covered, but are you covered well enough that we can't put the ball in the right area for you to make a play on it? And the receivers, I thought, really stepped up in the second half as well.
You hear players talk about it all the time. They just want to get out there and they want to make plays. We need somebody to make a play. And Titus Wall had a couple of them for you. One of them, obviously, there's the strip and the touchdown, which I'll ask you about in a moment. But the interception that he makes in the end zone, it's kind of routine. It's not a great ball thrown by Dane Evans. But if he doesn't come up with that, it's either 31-3, worst case, maybe 27-3 with a field goal, a huge turning point. Titus Wall's a player, I think second week in a row I'm asking you about him. He helped turn this, with one catch, turn this game around for you. Tell us a bit about the kid, and then I want to ask you about the strip touchdown play that tied the game.
Yeah, I can go into all that. I mean, you're right on the interception. It was, I think it was almost a case that they had too much momentum, and maybe Dane thought, I can slip a ball into a window that's really not there. You know, but then we gave it right back. And then I really feel like we won the game on short yardage. So we stopped them down on their own end on short yardage on 3rd and 1. And as you know, with Titus, then we come back in the middle of the fourth quarter and we stop him again. Not only do we stop him, he takes the ball out of his hands and goes for a touchdown. And short yardage is really, just be straight up, it's all about effort and want and desire, because it's tough in our league to stop people anyway. And if you're not 100% committed to trying to basically take away gaps and basically go low and just try to root hog your way to slow them down, and that's obviously not fun. I've never had to do it, obviously, but it is one of those things where it's commitment, and our guys were committed, and we did that, and that's how we won the game. Titus, you know, he's a playmaker. I know he can be better. He took a penalty on too many men on a field goal attempt that gave them a first down. But he's still young. He's still learning. But he's played a different position. He played Sam in week one, played free safety in week two. So, obviously, player of the week, well earned.
You don't see that play happen for, I guess, a number of reasons. Generally, a quarterback lunge, you're kind of going underneath. You're getting that push from the O-line. You try and slide through and knife your way in. That didn't happen as Dane was upright and still trying to push. And there's momentum, there's forward progress. Things get, either you get it or you don't, and it's whistled down before somebody's allowed to get in behind you and take the ball away. Have you ever seen a play like that in your career or as a coach?
I have not. You know, and I've been kind of at times, you're never sure when the whistle is going to blow. Like, I know we had one against Montreal a few years ago where I think it was like 20 seconds before they decided to put their hands up or give them forward progress stopped. I mean, quarterbacks want to keep fighting, and then if they're not down, it's just like anything else. You probably should allow them to do that. But what they do on third down a lot is they try to reach that ball at the last minute to try to get that first down. And we do always give them that last reach. So when he reached, I just reached in and grabbed it, and it was an amazing play. And It was kind of like you say, what just happened right there. I want to see that on replay again. But was watching it. Yeah, it was first off, Silas Stewart came in on the edge, made a great play, stood him up, and then Dane tried to kind of roll and reach back behind him to put the ball for the first down. And when he did, we just grabbed it and took off. So, like I said, pretty exciting play. It was a big for us for sure.
And I felt like the luck or lack thereof that you have with challenges or what and whatnot. I thought that they're going to change this. They're going to reverse this call. But I was surprised that it finally went in your favor. You got a little bit of luck there. You didn't get it on the horse collar, but you got it there.
Got it there, but yes, I did not win a challenge. I thought I had real good odds on that one too. So I guess, you know, you can only be lucky so many times. I was disappointed. I felt like on the challenge that it was a pivotal point in the game that it certainly seemed to me he just grabbed the basically the side of his jersey, and I didn't see any horse collar at all. But you win some, you lose some, I guess.
Yeah, well, all's well that ends well. And, you know, you talked about that third down play, and for the second week in a row, one of your guys, Jameer Thurman, coming through. He's right in the middle on that third down stop and then the pick to end it. You have new guys and you have veteran guys and some guys that you lean on, and I talked about Thurman a week ago. No shock, but he's really kind of being a guy for you back there right now. Tight games, down at the half, having to come back. Your defense needs to step up, and in both games, defense, in a way, won you those games.
Well, they're definitely opportunistic, and I think Therm, you know, two interceptions through two games. We haven't had that production at the Mike linebacker position turnover-wise for a while. So I think he's going to say that he probably could have played better. It was one of those games. There was a lot of motions and a lot of different formations, and I think we were on our heels here early. And I have to admit, when they're going no huddle, the communication is kind of paramount, meaning the coaches can call a defense, but it really has to get communicated to all 12 on the field. And we weren't really sharp early, and that falls a little bit on the linebacker position because he's a guy that has to communicate it to the front end, which is the down lineman, and the back end, which is your secondary. But he keeps stepping up, and that could play by Sopic too. So, you know, you keep mentioning different people. Soap was the one that came in and kind of took out the back, and ball pops up. You know, I was just like I said, like a bit in shock, really. I just, man, did we just win that game? And we did. So Thurm's been playing well, and happy for him.
It's the thing about the CFL, right? In so many ways, no lead is safe. And you can't say that, and it's not to get into the NFL versus CFL, but once you got into within that it's now a 7-point game, a 10-point game, you can't leave because it's two plays away from tying this thing up all together, and basically that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, they punt, I don't know, 2 minutes and maybe 2 minutes to go in the game, and they punt it down, and, you know, and we're inside our 10. I'm thinking, well, I got to get this ball out of here. We go two incompletions, have to punt back. They return it right back in our zone, basically like in field goal range. 2 plays later, they're kicking a field goal. It looks like it's over, but you're right with our rules and our clock. You know, we made the plays and big drive, and, you know, couple guys I thought stepped up, like Luther Hackenvo. That's a tough name to say for me, but Luther just made a huge play in the end zone. I thought KJ showed up big time. And then, you know, to be straight up, I thought Bo had a little bit of a swagger back. So, you know, you could see it. You could see the guys stepping up, and that for us is hopefully going to take us to the next level starting this week.
Yeah, Luther's name, that's hard for all of us. Don't feel bad. We're all in the same boat there. But yeah, I said to you a week ago, it was maybe Sindani and some of the other, it wasn't so much Kamar Jordan and it wasn't Begelton, but this week, both Begelton and KJ come through for you in that second half with some big plays. Obviously, big in terms of magnitude, but also in yardage. Some big gains to get you down the field and in a position for Renee to put it in.
Yeah, I think Reg, you know, he got a 38-yarder taken off the board as well. You know, I think when a lot of times when it's blitz, I think Bo likes to go there. I think when it's true blitz, I think Bo feels he knows what Reggie's going to do, and Reggie's going to come through for the catch. And kind of when we got in that zone where they were going to try to knock us out of field goal range and I knew they were going to bring the heat, it looked like Bo was leaning on Reggie. So, you know, a lot more left in the tank for sure. Reg is always going to work. You know, and we'll see how this game goes, but ultimately, yeah, we're happy that the big guns started really firing for us.
Yeah, I was going to, as I'm taking notes, watching the game, feeling like maybe this is a loss. I think Hamilton's a good football team. You're on the road, the win, this whole thing, and by the half, it looks like maybe it's not going to go your way. You had the Begelton catch wiped off on the KJ offside. The field goal, illegal procedure, it turns into a punt. Hamilton going for the field goal. You got too many men. They then turn it into a touchdown. There was enough reasons here, Dave, for you guys not to come away. For the second week in a row, you kind of overcome some either penalties or some plays that you'd love to have back. You take it. You're winning in spite of some of these things. Against Montreal, it was two or three big plays, and here it was you making the big plays when you needed them.
Yeah, and I think in early in the year, I mean, you're probably kidding yourself. You'd think you're going to be like a well-oiled machine, but you know what you got to do is you got to learn from your mistakes, regardless whether you're winning or losing. And it's a lot easier sometimes to look at things when you're losing and say, "We need to fix that." But yeah, just because we're 2-0 doesn't mean we need to fix. We still need to fix these major issues. And it, you know, the energy's better when you win. The players are in a better mood, and I think you can show up with a little bit. Better feeling, but you can't gloss over the mistakes. You got to fix the things that are causing you pain, and ultimately we're going to try to do that this week.
So when things like that are happening special teams wise, do you resist the temptation to walk down the sideline and start ripping coaches and your coordinators and that? How does that work?
Oh, I don't think that's really going to help anything, nor is it probably the right thing to do. So I mean, we all make mistakes. I've made so many in my life. But, you know, you just try to make sure you talk them over. And, hey, you know, then the other thing is you players, you can't put it all on the players as coaches. You've got to have an awareness of what's going on and put them in positions. Or maybe you're putting them in a position that's too tough. Then you got to look in the mirror and say, you know what, I'm doing too much there. I've got too many people in these situations. I got to lock it down to this guy or that guy. And I don't really like to rip the coaches, except that I've been there. It's not fun, but it's also, we're all in it together, and we're all going to win or lose together, and the players know that too. I actually feel like we've got a great chemistry started and a great room. Now, winning helps you build that chemistry and build that room, but I do think we just got quality people in our building, which is something that you strive for. That's going to hopefully keep us on the winning tradition here.
You mentioned Bo and the swagger. He's not unlike a lot of us, no matter what we do. When we're feeling confident and we're feeling good about how we're performing at our job, we're probably doing better work. But I think for Bo, when he's not in his own head, I think sometimes he's so focused on being the guy, and he's the gunslinger, and he's all of that. And when it's not happening for him, I feel like it can deteriorate in a hurry. And I'm with you. As soon as he started feeling it, you just felt like he's going to find a way. This is, you know, to say the old Bo, that's maybe not the right way to look at it. But that second half, it was vintage Bo anyway. He was making plays, threading the ball in where he needed to, and he needs that confidence. I don't know how you get it back once you lose it. You would know as a quarterback, you need to have that kind of me against the world mentality sometimes.
Probably sometimes, you know, I told him yesterday, you know, he's played some good football games in 2021. So, you know, it's just there's some games that he wants back. So I like to focus on more of the process and what we're trying to get done and be a part of the reason we're doing well. And to me, I've told you guys this before, and even in camp, it looks like Bo's having fun again. And, you know, you got to be careful. You know, you start thinking you're trying too hard, and it's just so important. And pretty soon, if it's not working out, it's really, you can see the weight of the world on your shoulders. And Bo's having fun. He's having fun in practice. He's having fun in training camp. You could tell he was doing the right things. And, you know, he's having fun winning and proving people wrong. So those are just, you know, everyone has their own motivations. And I think we all have pride. And it was good for Bo to feel like I think he trusts his arm. I think he trusts what we're doing, and that's just two positive things that were maybe different than maybe last year.
Were you? I feel like for you it was a little bit different. You're cerebral with Bo. It's been arm strength, and I'm guessing from the time he was a kid, a teenager, it's all been about his ability to whip it. You then lose that, even to a certain extent, and you're just not quite sure if you've got it. It's got to change the entire way you play. You're tentative. You're not where you need to be. For you, was there ever a time in your career where you knew there was one aspect of your game that you couldn't use effectively as you usually would, and then you have to start to compensate, and then obviously the results start to go down?
Yeah, I know. I don't think I ever had the reputation of being overly athletic, but when I felt like I couldn't move in the pocket, like when I felt like I had some knee and ankle problems, and when I felt like I couldn't make the first guy miss, and I was a sitting target, I felt like my game was going to go downhill. And that's basically what I think happened as I started getting more concussions and that sort of stuff, because I felt early in my career and for the longest time that if I could make that first guy miss, I could have a successful game. I could just shuffle in and out and make things happen. Didn't have to be this prettiest picture. It didn't have to be perfectly drawn up for me to have success. But when you don't trust your body, or you don't trust your elusiveness, or in Bo's case, trust your arm strength, and you like, well, I know that's open, but I'm not sure that I can get it there. I'm going to have to throw this earlier in order to make sure that it gets there. I'm sure that's part of the reason you don't have as much success as you've had in the past. So quarterback in their arm is just like receivers in their legs. It's one of those things that you got to have it. And to me, it looks like he's throwing well and throwing on top of the football. Again, that's a term we use, meaning you stay on top of the ball, you can drive it, you don't lose it high, you're better in the wind. His technique and the bow that I've seen throw so many touchdowns was back and making good plays again out there in Hamilton.
I do need to get you out of here, but I have to ask, both Kadeem Carey and Peyton Logan, didn't know a lot about Logan before the weekend, over 104 combined yards. He was great until he got leveled. Kadeem and Peyton Logan back at practice, Jalen Philpott slotting in there as the third guy for right now. Thought maybe we're going to see a press release come through with a new running back body this week. We've not seen that yet, at least. What's your confidence level in having one or two or all of them available for the game against Edmonton?
I'm thinking Kadeem is trending quite positively. Jalen, actually, yeah, like he had played running back in high school. It's a long time ago, but I know his dad was pretty good. So we gave him some carries yesterday, and he looked pretty good. So I'm not even sure how the roster, if he can make it on the roster, though. So, you know, we gotta try to figure things out. You know, we had a pretty good, you know, Dedrick Mills had a good week one, got a broken wrist. Peyton obviously looked good in his debut, got concussion. Kadeem's got ankle stiffness. So we need a run game. We need a run game. We need guys there. We've scoured the free agent wire as well. We've talked to people. We don't want to bring people in if our guys are healthy, because as you saw, we got a lot of faith and trust in our guys. But we need a couple running backs that are ready to go and try to keep Edmonton off balance.
Cam Judge on the defensive side, I guess curious about him, and Trey Roberson.
Yeah, both sat out yesterday. We had multiple guys in concussion protocol, and that's always an issue, and that's always an injury that you don't rush. So, we'll just figure him out. I thought Cam played really well, though. I mean, he had 9 tackles. I just feel like he's running the ball as good as anybody. And Trey, you know, I think his physicality, his size, he's our only corner. He's our only DB, really, that's got that good size. You know, so obviously we're playing a team, Edmonton, that has big receivers. So I mean, we need Trey out there to make us a better team, and hopefully that'll happen.
Saturday, Edmonton in town, 5:00, nice and early start, and looking at the forecast, it can change, but looking like sunshine and temperatures in the 20s. No reason not to get out and see Stamps Elks, right?
Well, that's my opinion. I mean, I love these type of games at 5. I think it's the best thing. I go to Flames games at 5. It's the best because you get to eat, and you just got to hang out and bring the family and hopefully see some winning football. And, you know, we're going to give it everything we got.
Got to be good at home, right, Dave? Got to be good at home. Looking forward to it. You sounded great. I was worried about you. Now I'm not worried at all.
10.
Yeah, I don't know.
Good.
I don't know what you're a bitch.
I'm coming around here.
Be good, Dave. Good luck on Saturday. All right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
bye.
Man. There he is, Dave Dickinson, head coach of the Calgary Stampeders. Elks in town. Again, 5:00. I'm with Dave. Maybe it's because I'm getting old, but that's great. Get down to the ballpark
nice
and early.
Good weather. Tailgate's not going to hurt at that. Oh yeah, perfect.
Keller will be out there with the potato salad.
No, he will. Jeez.
Good God almighty.
It's like, yeah, I got up at 4 a.m. this morning to start slow smoking these. Like, oh, wow, geez, that is good.
That's right.
Dedication.
Potato salad and ribs and...
Lord Hammers.
Yeah.
No, Lord Hammers. Yeah.
Ben Wagner, play-by-play voice of the Blue Jays. Day baseball coming up. We'll get into it with Wags. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Bit of a wild one on the south side in Chicago yesterday. Blue Jays had a lead, lost it, had a lead, lost it, had a lead, lost it, and then just lost it. 7-6, the final in 12. Took till the sixth inning to get their first hit, but then had a 4-1 lead in the ninth. But a blown save, the first of, home run for Alejandro Kirk, though. Our boy.
Locomotive Kirk was rolling.
Boy.
Did you see where he's at in the voting for the All-Star
game? I did.
He's almost got as many votes as the fresh Premier of Ontario did in that recent election. Love it.
Back at it today.
Matinee, get away.
That's right. Ben Wagner, play-by-play voice. Good to join us on an early game day. Ben, a wild one. Certainly It's one that they could have won. It's also one that they could have lost in the ninth were it not for an unbelievable grab. So plenty of drama yesterday, just not the result you needed.
Not the result you were hoping for, especially with, my goodness, that roller coaster that the Blue Jays found themselves on. I thought after Zimmer makes that diving grab in center field to preserve, at the moment, the game, the winning run was at third base. And Zimmer comes streaking in. He just checked in for defensive replacement, and he makes an incredible catch. And I thought, okay, these are the moments that really turn things around for the Blue Jays. There were moments like that on Sunday. It's been a wild 48 hours in Blue Jay baseball. If this thing, continues to roll the way it's supposed to roll, my goodness, how are we going to survive the playoffs? It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, there was a 3-week hiatus from high leverage every night, and we're right back to high leverage every night. This has been quite a run, and Romano's third blown save of the year. That's not many at all, given how much they've used him, how often they've had to use him, how many games he's come into that have been one run, not two or three. But, man, nobody on, two outs in the bottom of the ninth, the two-run lead, yikes.
Yeah, you think that's the lockdown situation. You look at that from a score standpoint and the outs, and you're like, that's really difficult. You watch it knowing Jordan Romano, he had some velocity that had dipped. His slider wasn't nearly as good, and he worked a ton of sliders early in the at-bats too. I don't know if there's residual and the hangover coming from, that five-out save on Sunday. There was a lot. It was a lot of pitches. Most pitches that he's thrown all year, clearly the most outs that he's been asked to get with the up down. And it takes a lot for a guy that's got a high motor like Romano to sit down. And that's why they like to bring him in clean innings. That's why they like to have him only go after the three outs in a given inning. And Jordan has told me, ideally that is just the way that he is wired. He likes to be amped up. He likes to run to the mound. And yesterday was an interesting situation because remember in the homestand, the Yankees early in that series asked for a review after the light went down, the Romano intro started, and they had to bring up the lights and stop the music and all that stuff. And Romano was just kind of like standing in left field. I asked him the day after, I said, when you get revved up like that and you're coming through that bullpen gate and you have to power down, I said, does that mess with you mentally, emotionally, just because he's a really, really energetic guy. And he told me in the moment like that, no, because you're still in the middle of it. You're in the midst of it. When you go back into the clubhouse, when you go back onto the bench, that's where your body, just kind of like takes itself out of the moment because you're still living it when you're on the field, right? So I thought about that on Sunday when he had to sit back down in the clubhouse and he comes out and obviously the Blue Jays win in epic comeback fashion. But there's always a couple of hiccups after those long outings for a lot of the closers and a lot of those power high leverage guys. So Romano not looking as sharp as what he did last night was not a surprise for me. It's the next outing if he's got that crispness back, more than the velocity. I need to see movement on the fastball. I need to see some sharpness on the slider. That's a better indicator of the residuals coming off that big outing on Sunday against New York.
Tomorrow an off day, then they go to Milwaukee, and then it's a lot of the division. Red Sox, five-game set against the Rays. That's AL East action coming at you. But to your point about Romero coming back, today would be a great day for a blowout win. They need a win badly. They used six pitchers last night. You'd love a starter to go deep, although it is Stripling, so you wonder about how much length he has. Will they allow him a third time through? This is not an easy one with Giolito on the other side either.
No, this is no picnic. It's actually the perfect storm if you're Chicago trying to get back on track. And Tony La Russa has taken a ton of heat. How he's managing games, how he's managing the bullpen. I mean, a ton of heat, just period, that the White Sox are underperforming. This was a team that was supposed to sit at top of the division. They made moves to be there. They've clearly had some injuries, right? And they haven't had Yan Moncada. They haven't had Eloy Jimenez. They had Tim Anderson basically out of the lineup for 3 weeks. And they lose not only Liam Hendricks, they lost Aaron Bummer, and they're missing another high-leverage arm in the bullpen. So that's six really big injuries. And listen, nobody's going to feel sorry for them, but they thought they had the depth and they were going to be better. And all of a sudden, they're looking up at the Twins, who on paper look like they kind of moved away from running at the division, Cleveland and the Chicago White Sox, who are still sitting up the top. So it's a really pressure-packed series with the Blue Jays rolling in there. But then the Blue Jays go, they've got to have a good series against Milwaukee. But even before you get to the Red Sox, who are playing really well, they jumped over the Tampa Bay Rays in the standings. And then the Rays come to Toronto. They've got five games. They play a night game on Thursday. You have the Canada Day afternoon game. You've got a split doubleheader on Saturday, a noon and then a six, and then an afternoon game on Sunday. It's basically the entire series within 72 hours. That is wild. And jeez, those games are never easy against the Tampa Bay Rays. And I don't want to look too far ahead because the pitching in Milwaukee is lined up and is going to be very, very good. Really, really good in Milwaukee. So today has so much swirling around it. You know, you'd like to see the offense go. What in the world are we going to hear from George Springer later today? And that injury situation, the good news for me, at least, is it's not the legs. And the legs have been the lingering issues with Springer. So if there is a silver lining that I'm trying to find in all of this, that it is not the legs on Springer. So, man, there is definitely no shortage of information and things to talk about around the Toronto Blue Jays. And today is no different.
So when did the Springer stuff crop up? Because they were showing a viz of him in the last homestand, grabbing at his elbow and talking to Bichette on the field kind of casually. Clearly, guys aren't just 100 or zero. There's varying levels of health, but this elbow thing is not new.
Yeah, great word, by the way, viz. That's very industry of you. So the video that was found of Springer and Bichette, I mean, he points right at the back of the elbow, just under the point of the elbow on the outside of his right arm. And there have been a couple of just lingering, nagging issues. And I still have yet to find maybe a throw where Springer, you know, tweaked something, made something. But remember, and I have to remind myself of this too, sometimes it doesn't happen on a throw. Sometimes these tweaks, these turns that players sustain is because they play hard. Maybe they slide hard. Maybe they dive back to first base and something gets jammed. Gleyber, I was at the ballpark when Gleyber Torres was on the cusp of being called to the big leagues for the New York Yankees. There was a play at the plate. His elbow got turned and he had Tommy John surgery. It wasn't the throwing arm, but he had to have Tommy John surgery on an elbow. So there are so many things that are swirling around it. And unfortunately, I can't do a deep dive, you know, lurk in the shadows and try to find out right now. But it'll be very interesting to find out when and how all of this happened, if we were allowed to learn from Springer, because it's really fascinating when you find out about these injuries. And I talked to Matt Chapman. Remember, he missed a couple of games last week. And I talked with Matt Chapman at the batting cage. And I said, you know, like, what's the problem with the wrist? He said, it's just lingering. I've tried to play through it a week. And, you know, these things just pop up and all of a sudden the guy's out of the lineup. And then you learn that Chapman had been trying to play through this for a week. He did something in the cage a couple of days prior, and it just hasn't felt right since. So he needed some downtime. So, You know, it's the middle of June. You're knocking on the door of July here. This is the time of year where bumps and bruises, you just kind of grind through the days and try to get to the All-Star break and see if guys can freshen up their bodies. So it's no surprise to hear some of this stuff is kind of lingering around the clubhouse, but it's certainly unfortunate because they're such impact players. And the Blue Jays need strength. They need some depth in their lineup because when they have it, you know what they're capable of.
Was that a step forward for Gausman last night? It's weird to say that about a guy. I think his ERA was sub-2 like 3 weeks ago. But did you see a significant step forward from Gausman, albeit the second-best starter on the night?
Yeah, it is. It is for me because I saw life on the fastball and I saw a much better splitter last night. And I'm going to give him a mulligan against the Baltimore Orioles. We found out after the ball game where he said he was fatigued, didn't have the energy. Okay, in the days after that then, because you hear that and you're thinking, well, that's something very strange. And Kevin Gausman is like no frills, man. So for him to say something like that, you know, you follow up after a couple of days and things set in. We find out that he was sick as a dog, woke up that morning in sweats, needed to have IVs, got to the ballpark, wasn't even sure if he could give it a go. And I mean, he was grinding out there, and it certainly didn't go the way that he wanted. So now, flip the switch. Guess where he's at? In Chicago, where it's high heat, high humidity. First pitch was at 36. You know, the Humidex was over 40 last night at the first pitch. So I'm thinking, man, is this going to wear on his body? And he looked great. He looked great last night. So that looked like the guy that we saw in the month of April. He has a ton of soft contact overall. And that was a really encouraging sign against a contact-made lineup. You know, the Chicago White Sox are going to double you and single you to death. And they've got a couple of threats in the order. Of course, they can hit the ball out of the ballpark. But for me, that was vintage Kevin Gausman right there. And the way that the Blue Jays did some new things behind him, by the way, to take away some of that soft contact because he was getting beat on the shifts and everything else that the Blue Jays are all in on. And they kind of made it more of a traditional approach behind Kevin Gausman last night, and it was to his benefit.
Back to Stripling today. It's a 12:10 first pitch Mountain Time, Giolito for the visitors. What do you expect from Stripling, who's been, I think, better than you could have asked, given the role he's stepped into with Hyunjin Ryu's season-ending injury?
More of the same from Strip. You know what? Fastball command has been really good. The changeup has been elite. Elite changeup for Ross Stripling, which is a different kind of style of pitching for him. When I talked to Pete Walker, you know, he was a fastball curveball guy, maybe mix in a little bit of a slider. Just he had it in the back pocket, didn't feature it that frequently. But then all of a sudden, this changeup this season has gotten so much better, and that has been a big difference maker. And it necessarily doesn't have to go against left-handed batters too. Some lineups can afford to stack up lefties, which, okay, that plays right into the hand of a traditional pitching approach. You sink it and swim it away from left-handed batters, and a changeup for a right-hander can become a big difference maker. But what Ross has been able to do is make that changeup as equally as effective righty on righty. And that has been such a good thing for him to get through the order. I don't believe, well, I don't know who's available, right? When we go to the ballpark, we never know who's available in the bullpen until we find out after who was available in the bullpen. They're a little taxed today. We know that just looking at the amount of pitching that was necessary in Chicago last night. And if they do, it'll be matchup made. Allow him to see the lineup the third time through, and they'll be very, very cautious with it. But ideally, the role of Ross Stripling is going to change. It's going to be two times through the order, and then you piece it together out of the bullpen from then on. But the good news is, Ross has been putting the Blue Jays in a position to win baseball games when he's been on the hill, and that's the most encouraging.
And finally, just the vibe at Rogers Center last weekend. It was a huge series against the Yankees. The results weren't what the Jays wanted, but that's just the Yankees doing what they've been doing to everyone. And what's sort of the buildup here is they've got Vladdy and Vlad Sr. bobblehead night, two divisional rivals coming to town when they're done in Milwaukee.
I love it. The vibe at Rogers Center during the last homestand was amazing. And Father's Day was incredible. And on so many different levels, it was incredible. The Blue Jays themselves sold out the building, sold out the entire building for the first time since the playoff run in 2016. And when I say that, just don't think about the chair backs. There are hundreds of suites that go around the two rings on the 300 and the 400 level. They were all sold out. This is like Blue Jay buzz that has not been seen since the 15 and 16 season. So obviously the Blue Jays are exciting. They're certainly worth watching. Sunday was no disappointment, and hopefully they can get things back on track, because it'll be a massive homestand, widely attended, and very exciting with the Red Sox and then the Rays rolling into town. And plus it's Canada Day. So, hey, summer's here. So your baseball team is playing great. Get on board.
I understand you ran into some big baseball fans from Calgary. Some really big fans made their way out to
Toronto.
Huge fans. Yeah, huge fans.
Massive
huge fans. I mean, imposing in fandom. yes, I got to reunite with some people from Calgary.
Yeah, there you go.
After the ball game on Sunday, and that was awesome.
Yeah, they're big fans of you.
Really?
Yeah,
we're big fans of yours as well.
Yeah, they're big.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah, 100%.
That's very nice. Are we talking? Am I talking to Calgary at noon today?
We've decided to do just a thank you but no thank you today, because we got Stanley Cup final and we know that it's going to go to 12 innings again today, like it did yesterday, and that's going to run into our pregame. So yeah,
that's fine.
Anyway.
Okay, well, we'll meet again.
We will. Thank you, sir.
You got it, guys. Talk next week.
Ben Wagner, play-by-play voice of the Blue Jays. Yes, day baseball today. Wrap things up against the White Sox. Road, and then drink responsibly. Is that right?
I like that.
Drink responsibly for sure. You could spend the extra night in Chicago. This was the exact road trip I did, I want to say, in 2013, the summer, maybe 14.
Yeah.
It was like a month before I met my wife. It was like, remember, we were doing the show, and there's four game set against the White Sox, and you know, Stroman was pitching the one day, so we bucked up for the good seats. He didn't last two innings. You're like, mother.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then up to Milwaukee. Yeah. We're going to watch Packers practice on an off day. I got rained out a little, so we just, I guess, paid the rent at a brewery one day instead, and then went to the Brewers game.
Weren't you playing, or was that in... See, it was a different you then.
That was before fatherhood.
Because back then there was trips to Portland to
Portland was our first
to
date.
Drink, and then trips to Milwaukee to drink. You were playing.
It was that summer. Yeah.
Weren't you playing poker or something with the bartender? Over
that's in Milwaukee.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the Center of Performing Arts,
right.
And then a couple blocks down there's Arts Performing Center. Very, very different types of arts and cultural events. And then next to Arts Performing Center, there's a place where you just play dice with the bartender, and there's $1 bottled beer. So you can drink $1 of beer and then gamble for shots with the bartender. You just get blotto for $20 American. Impressive stuff. Downtown Milwaukee.
You don't get to Milwaukee unless you're planning to go to Milwaukee, I feel like. But you...
And I was familiar from my AHL days, because the affiliate of the Nashville Predators was based out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was...
The Admirals, right? Is that what it would have been?
Remember.
Yeah.
I was blanking out on that for some reason. Marty Giannu was working for them at the time, which was weird because he soon after joined the Flames. But that was when I first got, familiar with said club. And I think we had a playoff series when it was in Abbotsford in Milwaukee as well, which was kind of neat. So you get to spend a little time, explore. It's a fun little city, I tell you. It's not LA. It's not Chicago. It's not the sexiest, but it's fun.
And how's the ballpark?
Awesome. I love the ballpark. I don't think it gets enough love.
Yeah.
So retractable roof, but also a ton of glass. You get lots of natural light in. It's not like you're in a cave. But then also on good days, they open it right up, and super family friendly. Lots of different vantage points. Really unique park, and people tailgate. Like it was a Tuesday Wednesday set in Milwaukee that summer. And people were there hours before the game, midweek. I'm like, do you guys work? What are you doing? And they all have like Wisconsin Badgers themed like ambulances they bought secondhand. They're just sitting there. This is all their football tailgating off season. They just tailgate baseball games in the summer to keep informed.
Is my boy still hitting dingers? Still crushing dingers out there for the Brew Crew?
I haven't paid attention. I'm looking at the upcoming series. I forgot. It was the Brew Crew until yesterday.
10 homers on the year for my boy, Rowdy Tellez.
It's not nothing.
My big boy.
Your adult son.
Yeah, my big boy. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit of golf with Luke Elvey. This LIV Golf Tour, if you want to call it the tour, it's creating waves. For sure. And I don't know that it's going to go away anytime soon.
The financing seems to be pretty solidly based. Yeah, wait till they run out of my... Okay, so they're going to keep paying people, I guess.
And it's become very much a... People are framing it as an ethical decision. Are you that type of person? Are you this type of person? And all of that.
I have a tough time with that a bit. Like, do you check your labels on where all your consumer goods are built?
No, I understand you've been very...
I just don't know why with golf it's all of a sudden different than where your cell phone's made or where your clothes are made. Like, do you only care about human rights and the actions of dictatorships or, you know, family-run countries? Like, is it only when it comes to sports? Where's this higher moral ground in the rest of your life, where you spend more money than you do on golf?
And it is a case where, wasn't it Ted DiBiase? Everybody's got a price, right? I think it's easy to kind of point at other people and make decisions for them or critique decisions that they have made based on certain criteria. If we were in
that spot,
would we be able to have that same clarity that we feel we have right now?
Totally.
I don't know
that
that's the case.
Absolute nonsense. So, for example, 3 rounds, no cuts. So you're guaranteed a paycheck. You don't disappear after a bad Thursday, Friday and make no money for showing up somewhere and having to travel across the continent to go there or whatever. So there's more security in the least you can make. And then the ceiling for these paychecks are way higher. Dean, if I told you that, okay, you're working at this radio station here, but you could do 3 shows a week instead of 5 and make way more money, but the person writing the checks for you, well, you know, that's a decision for you to make. No one else can judge you on that, what that money means to your family, what that could do for your life.
And you could judge me all you wanted, too. I probably wouldn't. I'd be all right with it.
Yeah, as long as the money's good.
Because I'd be telling you.
What's your price?
Yeah, that's right. Luke Elvey, when we come back, Sportsnet 960.